This evening, our habit of the 14 habits. Is that just cold or are you stove up and cold? Open your mouth. There are little muffins here, if you'd like. This evening, as we begin looking at this particular habit of highly effective disciples, probably preaching to the choir here. I said last week that tonight would be on stewardship, so we'd probably have a smaller group. That happens a lot of times. But here in this particular lesson, the real question is that we face is, what does it mean to be a good steward? How are we good stewards, or are there ways we can improve on stewardship? Obviously, most of the time when we talk about stewardship, most folks think of the stewardship of money. I have contended for decades now, because I'm, as you've probably figured out in all these years, I'm one who believes very heavily in use of the mind as well, and not just the heart. But most of we who are in my position, and especially in Baptist churches, people are used to, we talk about being good stewards of your money, and good stewards of your time, and good stewards of your money, and good stewards of your talents, and good stewards of your money, and good stewards of your money. But my contention is, if we're not a good steward of the mind with which God gave us to think, and to reason, and to study, and to learn, we can't be a good steward of any of those other things. And so it involves not just the idea of money, but everything. And as we talked this morning, and even before I looked at this a couple of weeks back to see where we were headed in this particular study, I had already determined that we were in Deuteronomy 8 this morning. So here we are in Deuteronomy 8 again, at least a portion of it, as well as Matthew chapter 25. But I want to begin this evening by asking some questions. Feel free to agree, disagree, say you're undecided. Well, I'll ask, and you can raise your hand or not. If you don't want to participate, that's okay too. Raise your hand as you agree, disagree, or are undecided about these particular statements. God requires His followers to give 10% of their resources to Him. Agree, disagree? All those who agree? Hold your hand up. All those who disagree? All those who are undecided? All those who just don't want to participate? No. Secondly, everything we have and everything we are belongs to God. All those who agree? Okay. Disagree? Undecided. I think just about every hand went up anyway. I love this one. We give to the church because we know we will receive 10 times more in return. All those who agree? Okay. All those who disagree? All those who are undecided? The reason I said I love that one is I had a colleague one time who was actually a Church of God minister and a chaplain who said that his minister used to get phone calls from all these things, sow your seed money and you'll get back 10 times. And he had gotten so many of them. I've told some of you this story before. I don't think I've told everyone. He got so many. And one Sunday morning, he brought the phone in with a long, long cord and sat it down. And right before the sermon, he was going to talk about stewardship, but he started talking about those phone calls he had been getting. And he happened to have the 800 number for one of those groups. And so he said, I want to dial and talk with him for a moment. I want y'all to be my witnesses. So he dialed the number and he got somebody on there and he got to talking with him. And And he said that his minister said, "Now, you know, you've called me and you said, 'Oh, yes, yes,' it said, 'and you really believe that if I send you $100, it'll return to me 10 times over.' 'Oh, yes, we absolutely believe it. We'll pray for it.' He said, 'And y'all really need the money?' 'Oh, yes, we do.' He said, 'Well, I tell you what, you send me the $100, we'll pray for you and see if you get $1,000 back.'" Click. Click. Obviously one of the more spurious groups that's out there. Okay? Christian stewardship involves more than just money. Agree? Disagree? Well, there can't be any undecideds because everybody raised a hand on agree. Except for me, my hands are in my pockets. I don't want to influence anybody. Wealth and well-being can cause us to become proud and less dependent on God. Agree? Okay. Wealth and well-being can cause us to become proud and less dependent on God. Proud of our accomplishments. All those who agree? Disagree. Yeah. Disagree. Undecided. Okay. An intimate relationship with God can motivate us to share our resources with others. Agree? Disagree? You're scratching your nose. No, but then the second time when I said disagree, you went like this. Okay. To whom much is given, much is required. To whom much is given, much is required. Agree? Disagree? Undecided? Okay. Money can buy lots of happiness.
It can, yeah.
It can, yeah.
It's a valuable tool as far as that goes.
Agree? Disagree? Money can buy lots of happiness. Disagree? Or undecided? Yeah. Now that's interesting. It's actually, if you were to look throughout the Hebrew text at tithing, and you add up all the different tithes that are out there at different points in the year, a person could end up actually giving about 34% to God instead of 10. You might want to stick with 10. Now, but as I said the other week, study's been done a lot, but just a couple of years ago, study was done, and among Baptists in the United States, the average giving was, instead of 5 years earlier, it was between 2 and 4%. It's now between 3, 3.5, and 4% that the average Baptist gives to the church. Not the 10% that would be considered a tithe. Well, some do. And I've known folks that, you know, when they were younger and dealing with children and all and struggling was less than when they got older, they started increasing. But tithing is more than just the money, although this is budget time. And the Budget and Finance Committee was meeting a while ago to look at proposals for next year's budget. I just think it's kind of interesting. Serendipitous or fortuitous or doggone it, I should have skipped tonight, that it falls at this time of the year, this lesson on stewardship, when we're dealing with budget. And by the way, next week is thankfulness, and that's the Sunday before Turkey Day. So all this stuff's falling together here at, rather interestingly, at this particular time. But one of the lesson writers here talk about the fact that one of those spiritual habits of highly effective disciples is stewardship, being good stewards of all that God gives us. Not just the money, but all that God gives us. And as we said this morning, Moses called upon the people to remember that all good gifts come from God. In fact, in the New Testament, we're told that all good gifts come from the Father of lights, which is God. And so we find, and of course it's all I can do not to break out into a song from Godspell. All good gifts around us are sent from heaven above. So thank the Lord, thank the Lord, thank the Lord. Godspell was really a good musical based on the Gospel of Matthew. But I digress. So, biblical stewardship, how would you see it as related to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 10 through 18? When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I'm giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. By the way, that your heart will become proud, literally in Hebrew, means your heart will be lifted high up. But it's not lifted high up by God, you lift it high up. He led you through the vast and dreadful desert, that thirsty and waterless land with its venomous snakes and scorpions. Some translations say fiery snakes, and actually the Hebrew word used there is seraphim. He brought you water out of hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the desert, something your fathers had never known. This sounds familiar. To humble and to test you so that in the end it might go well with you. You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant which he swore to your forefathers as it is today. So, let's talk a little bit. How do you see stewardship, biblical stewardship, as it relates here in this passage? You see any connection? Biblical stewardship. Do what? Well, you have to pray, but your prayer then should lead to action. Negative way. Yeah, but yeah, that's right. You can, but what do most people do? Verse 11, be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God. Right after, when you've eaten and are satisfied, and have all this good. The tendency for a lot of folks is, right. Yeah. That's right. All I need, build the bigger barns. And we know what that parable said that Jesus told. But, you know, that's the tendency. And when he says here, be careful that you do not forget. The word in Hebrew is sakah, which means forget. But more often than not, it means ignore. Ignore. Be careful that you do not ignore the Lord your God. Yeah, there could be a difference in forgetting. There is a difference in forgetting and just flat out ignoring. Right? And I think that's probably the better translation here, personally, and that in a dollar gets you drink machine less dollars or more, unless drinks are more expensive. Dollars are certainly not more expensive these days. But, to ignore, be careful not to ignore what God has commanded. Remembering that God has given you all of these things, God does all of these things for you, and has given all this to you, so be careful to develop that habit of stewardship. Stewardship, stewardship. Remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. So that's where I also come back to being a good steward, not just of your money and your talents and your time, but being a good steward of the mind that God gave with you so that you can develop those talents, those gifts that are given as well. Any other connections that you see stewardship going along here with this particular passage? We're going to move to Matthew in a few moments. Anybody tell me, without looking it up, anybody tell me where the whole idea of the tithe comes from? Earlier than that, Malachi does talk about tithing, and Malachi even goes so far as to say, to accuse the people when they don't tithe, they're stealing money from God. But where did the tithe originate? Yes, Melchizedek. That's right, Roger, Melchizedek. King of Salem, which was the name for Jerusalem, and priest of God Most High. Book of Genesis, when Abram has defeated the kings at Kedorlaomer and other places, and he goes, and in gratitude he gives 10% of everything he owns, money, animals, grain, gives 10% of that to Melchizedek, who at that point is called, bless you, King of Salem, priest of God Most High, in gratitude to God. And so that is actually where the tithe begins, with that particular story. And 10% becomes so important that later it's also the, it's not 10%, but 10 righteous persons, or Sodom and Gomorrah, get destroyed and can't find 10. And that's also the basis for it takes 10 righteous men to start a synagogue. So 10 crops up rather regularly as an important number related to God and relationships with God and with each other. But the tithe goes all the way back to Melchizedek. And then when you get to Hebrews, the letter of the Hebrews, the anonymous author there bounces the priesthood of Melchizedek off against the high priesthood of Jesus. And the priesthood of Melchizedek was considered the greatest of the priesthoods, even greater than the Aaronic priesthood throughout history, until we come to this point in time where Jesus is the high heavenly priest who has offered himself, where even Melchizedek had to offer offerings, sacrifices and offerings, tithes and offerings. We do read, bring all the tithes into the storehouse. That comes up as well. So as it relates here, we find then that the whole idea of stewardship is to carefully consider from where our gifts come, regardless of what those gifts might be, money, talents, mind, etc., and then to appropriately not only remember where they come from, but then use them as ways to praise God, to expand our relationship not only with God and with others. Now, at that particular, at this particular point then, we move to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Starting in verse 14. By the way, the whole idea, and your writer just brings it out briefly, but the whole idea in Deuteronomy is the reason Moses hits this stuff so much, and there are multiple speeches Moses gives. A lot of repetition, but multiple speeches. Number one, Moses is preparing to die, and he's not going to be leading the children of Israel, and he wants to pound it into their heads to remember this stuff. And we find later that they need to remember this stuff because they get there and they forget this stuff. And that's what gets them into trouble over and over and over again. But here we come to Matthew chapter 25, the parable of the talents, starting in verse 14. A man who goes on a journey, calls his servants, entrusts his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money. That's, you know, that doesn't mean song, dance, play an instrument. You know. 5 talents of money. To another one he gave 2, and to another one 1, each according to his ability. So, not everyone gets the same talent. Not everyone gets the same gifts other from God, other than redemption and salvation. But they are given how? As the master determines what we need and what we can handle. So the gifts and the talents that you're given by God are given because God says, this is something that you can use. This is something that I'm giving to you, a gift, a talent, for you to use in your specific way. Now, the talent, it varied depending on whether it was a Greek, as you know, if you read this, as a Greek talent or a Roman talent, etc. But the New Testament, in the New Testament, generally, the talent was worth how much money? One talent, that weighed 80 pounds, it was worth 6,000 denarii. a denarius, if you worked in the fields from sunup to sundown, you got paid one denarius for that day's work. 6,000 days work. Right? About 20 years of a day laborer's salary. And this particular, obviously this guy's wealthy, right, in this parable. Very wealthy. And he gives to one servant 30,000 denarii. 5 talents. 5 times 6,000. 30,000 denarii. I mean, if you think about it, that's 100 years worth of money for a day laborer. He gives the other guy 2 of those. So that's 18,000. And he gives the other one 1. As he determines they can handle it. As he determines that they can use it. But each one was given that talent with what expectation? Right. A return of their efforts, a return of what he gave them back to him, but he expected by giving them that they would do something to increase it. Right? And so he goes away, and the guy who had 5 talents went out. He used that money, put it to work. Good in business, I guess, or finance, or I would say, you know, the stock market, but the stock market back then would actually be animals. Maybe bought him more camels and horses and cows and goats and sheep. I don't think he'd buy him any pigs. So he goes and he increases it. The man who has 2 goes out and he increases it. Okay, he doubles his. From 2 to 4. But the one guy who had this 1 talent didn't really realize the importance of using that talent. He's entrusted with it, and what does he do? He buries it. He puts it deep down in a hole. After a long time, the owner comes back, and he says, okay, come on, give a report. Let's see. And we find the first guy comes and says, I've been faithful. Here we go. Boom. I doubled this. You entrusted me with 5. I gained 5 more. And the master said what? Well done. But then, what did he say? Well, we each have responsibility, but here the master says, tell you what, you've been faithful in a few things, I'm going to put you in charge of more. Yeah. So the more we do, the more responsibility we show, guess what? The more expectation there is. God doesn't, like this master, say, hey, that was great, you really did well with that. Go sit down and put your feet up, just enjoy the rest of life. No, there's more for you to do. The one that had 2 doubles his, and he comes back and he says the same thing. You were faithful in a few things, although I don't think that much money is just a few or a little, but you were faithful in a few. Well, I'm going to give you more responsibility. Now, we're not told how those guys reacted or what they were thinking. We presume that they decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do more. We don't know. One of them might have said, I shouldn't have done such a good job. Now I got to do more. Now I got to work harder. Yes. Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any harps.
In other words, what you're suggesting then is what? I'm had a men's ministry camp one time, and this very young guy looked at me and said, oh, he was so excited about getting in heaven. It sounds like I just like to sit around. Listen, this is not cool. No, that's not what life is about. The more that you do for the Christ and the Holy God, the Holy Triune God, means that throughout eternity you get to do more.
Well, that's true. And what that's going to be, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, angels with wings and harps. Nah, streets literally paved with gold. I don't think so. I think it's beyond anything we can imagine.
One more question, and I'm going to let it back to the audience.
Yes.
Everyone we saw the movie we alluded to this morning, they shot through a wormhole through another universe. What stops God from continuing to expand and create more universes and more creation?
No, I don't think that we put God in a box to say that. You know, God, if God is God and God creates the universe, God can do whatever God wishes, because God's outside of our parameters. And we try to put all kinds of parameters on God, and we try to imagine all of these all of other scenarios. But I think that we don't know what God is going to require of us. But whatever it is, it's not going to be sitting around on streets of gold in a rocking chair, rocking back and forth and playing a harp. I think, of course, one of the dangers sometimes that we can get into in looking at those things, and I'm not saying that God doesn't create other worlds and life in other places, is we have folks out there who, in their darker and deeper teachings, I won't mention any names, but their founder was Joseph Smith, you too can become a god. You can be a god over another world, because God actually was a human on another planet who got so good that he became a god. And that's not, you know, that in itself then removes the whole idea that there is a supreme God.
This is St. Joseph Smith that I said to the old pastor last week, who was in Poland, that Joseph Smith has four wives forever. So he's looking for the heaven where about 6,000 wives, like, or 1,000 wives like Solomon, instead of this morning.
I have said, and we'll get back to this in a moment, but I have said for a long time now that Solomon really was not the wisest man. And that's why. I could not imagine trying to love and care for and grow in such a way with more than one woman. So, you know, that's, but the point here is, you know, you get more and more and more, and it starts here. It's not just out there. Jesus says the kingdom's here. The kingdom starts here. We start living the kingdom now. We start experiencing the kingdom now. That's in Jesus' teachings. You know, I mean, when he comes and begins preaching, the end is here. That's the end of the old age, beginning of the new. The kingdom of God's breaking into history now. Repent and become part of the kingdom now. And the whole teachings about, you know, in the Beatitudes and everything, that's kingdom ethics. That's living in the kingdom now. That's not saying, okay, well, when we die, we can be the poor in spirit. We can be the meek. We can be those who are pure in heart. We're to start striving for that now. And that's part of, we're given that opportunity, what do we do with it? Do we do like these guys and work at it and expand our knowledge, our living out that connection, that relationship, expand that relationship? Or do like this other guy would go, oh, well, wait a minute, God gave me this, but I'm going to go sit over here because I'm afraid somebody might criticize it or somebody might ask more of me than I need to, so wall myself off. So that's basically what that guy said. So what I started to say a while ago, when, you know, I said, what did he do? And he said, he hid it. He buried it. Sometimes we bury that inside. God gives us a talent or an ability, and we bury it inside. Because we're afraid to use it. We're afraid, well, what if I use it and I might lose it? Or what if I use it and somebody doesn't like it? What if I use it and they laugh at me? Well, you know, Jesus used a whole lot of stuff, and he got laughed at, spit on, hollered, hated and finally killed. And when they finally got to thinking about it and started doing it, how many of the disciples and how many disciples ever since then over the millennia have said, well, I'm going to step up and do this anyway. And they end up being persecuted for it. So this, the last guy said, well, I knew you're a hard master. And I knew that you required a whole lot. And I knew if I messed up, you were probably going to smack me down. So I just went ahead and hit it. And here it is back. And what did his master call him? Wicked and lazy. He missed the mark. He was wicked. He missed the mark. And while this is Jesus' parable here in the New Testament, in Hebrew, wicked simply means to miss the mark. It's not necessarily being Jeffrey Dahmer or Hannibal the Cannibal or, you know, somebody like that. It simply means to miss the mark. If we were having an archery contest in here, and we call on Jim to shoot at the target for one, he bow hunts. Shoot a target for this side of the room. We're going to let Ed shoot for this side of the room. And they flip a coin, or they say, how are we going to decide? So I'll flip a coin, and I flip it, and it starts rolling, and I follow it across the floor, and then it leans against the wall, so I have to kick it so that it'll fall over, because that's my luck. And it turns out that Jim gets to shoot first. And so we got this target on the wall. Jim gets up there, he pulls out his bow, he looks at Ed, and he kind of grins, and he draws that bow. He lets the arrow fly that far outside the bullseye. That far outside the bullseye, Ed's going. And this side of the room starts cheering. You know what the judge would say? You're wicked. You missed the mark. That's right. You missed the mark. But I only missed it by this much. Maxwell Smart. But you still, that's right. Well, horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weapons. Yeah, close on the counts and horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weapons. But you still missed the mark. That's the point. Who knows? Ed gets up there and he's shaking and he lets it fly and it hits the ceiling and goes right in the bullseye and Jim loses. Probably not, but yeah, but he might. Yeah. Right. So the point here is that if we have these talents, whether it is money or a gift that we have in us or some other gift that we have been given or blessed with by God, and we aren't good stewards of that talent. A steward cultivates. A true steward cultivates. It's the same idea. And takes care of. It's the same idea in the Garden of Eden stories. Put them in there to till it and to keep it. In other words, to be stewards, to be caretakers. We're to be caretakers of what God gives us, the earth and everything else. It's the same thing here. Now, the caretaker gets to take care of it, but also generally the caretaker of the garden got to at least get a portion of it for themselves too, which meant they'd take extra care of it, supposedly, to do that. Well, it's the same thing with stewardship here. When God gives us those gifts, we need to cultivate them and take extra care of them and use them as they should be. Of course, one of the other things that they say is, if you don't use it, you might lose it. And that's what happens here. He doesn't use that talent, and he loses it. I have had people. And I've even used it with my oldest son because he's got a wonderful voice and he used to be in Furman Singers and all this kind of stuff. And he played the piano and used to go to all kinds of competitions or recitals, honors recitals at Newberry when he was just a kid. And only a certain number of kids in the state get to do that. And sometimes I'll ask Stephen, because we gave him the piano after they got married and moved to Irmo, and said, play your piano lately? Well, not quite as much, so you know. Because it was told to me, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. I've used the same thing. Singing with the choir, well, I hadn't in a while. Got to use your voice, son, so you don't mess it up. And that's the thing. This guy didn't use the talent, whatever he was given. Here it's money, but it could be any number of things. He wasn't a good steward of it. He didn't utilize it. He didn't grow it and expand it to its full potential. So what does he do? He loses it. And he's called lazy and wicked. Why? Because he lost it. He didn't do anything with it. And the master, yeah, the master was hard. But the master was hard from the standpoint of, I entrusted you with this. You were to grow with this. They didn't just grow it. They grew with it as well. They learned more as they invested in whatever the money or the talent was. And so, you know, good stewards, good managers of those things which God gives to us. From these stories, some of the theological truths we find. Everything, first of all, everything belongs to God. We're just loaned it. How many times have you thought or been told, especially when your children grow up and they move off, well, you were just loaned them for a while. Right? I've had people say that. They were yours for a while. Now they've got to go out on their own. But you know something? Stephen and David are still my babies. Here they still are. But, you know, everything belongs to God. Secondly, God entrusts us with a certain amount of resources. God entrusts us with the abilities, whether it's the ability to make money, whether it's the ability to expand corporations, whether it's the ability to teach well or to raise children well or to do well in business, whatever. Maybe even to do well in sports. I don't care how talented he initially may have been, although how would you like to have been the coach that cut Michael Jordan off the ball team? But Michael Jordan would not have become the player that he became did he not work at that talent. Work, work, work. Now, he's done a lot of other things that I haven't agreed with in his personal life, but with that talent that he was given, and you could extend it to all kinds of folks, but God gives us a certain amount of those resources and those talents, and we're responsible to develop them and to use them. And we as Christians are even more responsible not just to develop them and to use them, but develop them and to use them in connection with God. Keeping that master who sometimes we think is off somewhere. He's not. He's watching us. He's right here. But we think he's off somewhere, so, oh, God doesn't see me doing this. Nobody knows this. Yeah, that's what David said too. Nobody knows but Bathsheba and me. Well, and Uriah the Hittite, but he was dead. So nobody knows but Bathsheba and me. And he forgot about God watching over him. God will hold us accountable as well. You know, people think about the great white throne judgment. You know, we're actually being judged every day. That's a scary thought, isn't it? God's watching what we do every day. He's judging whether we're being faithful or not every day. Every day. He's taking stock of what we're doing, and God will hold us accountable. Now, what that accountability results in, we really don't know for sure. If we are faithful, we're told it's going to be something even beyond what we can imagine. But it's also going to involve responsibility. If we're not faithful, it's probably going to be something beyond what we can really imagine too, right? Yeah. Folks used to tell me, and I sometimes would pass it along. You know, they say, if you marry the right person, there's nothing like it. If you marry the wrong person, there's nothing like it either. I don't want to experience that second one. But, God's going to hold us accountable, so we need to take stock of how we use the resources. Time, money, talents, care for the environment, all those kinds of things. So, God expects us to be good stewards. It's throughout the Bible. It's written on a whole lot of pages. What are some ways that we can be good stewards? What are some ways? And we'll finish up in just a few minutes, maybe. Right. Well, and it's the attitude too. That was the whole problem. It had absolutely nothing to do with blood, as opposed to grains and vegetables. With God saying, "Okay, I'm going to accept Abel's, and I'm not going to accept Cain's." It had everything to do with the attitude with which they gave it. Cain gives of the fruits of the ground. Had he given the best, it would have said Cain gave of the first fruits. But he gave the leftovers, the dregs, to God, and he kept the good stuff for himself. Abel gives of the firstlings of the flock and their fat portions. In other words, he gave the young and the tender and the best, and he kept the rest for himself. And God warns Cain and says, if you do what's right, you'll be accepted. And Cain said, well, okay, fine. I'm going to go over here and kill my brother instead of giving God anything else. Right? And then see what he does. Right? We know. But, okay, that's true. What are some other things we can do to be good stewards? Or what are some things of which we can be good stewards? How can we be good stewards? Yeah, we were leaving some other folks that are in this room in the dust, actually. There were some other folks in here walking too, but Bobby decided he's going to get out front and go. So that's what we did. Yeah. But yeah, we do those, and each person has that talent, and we need to use them together. Yeah. So we do those kinds of things. In fact, last week, the lesson was on service, and part of it was straight from the upper room in John. In fact, all of that section 13 through 17 took place. Well, actually, 13 through 18 took place on that last night. And yes, Peter wanted to at first no, but then he wanted to have his whole body, and Jesus said, "No, there's only one part that needs, and this is the part that you need to have done. But you need to do that, or you have no part of me." And that's really a harsh kind of thing, we think, but then again, if we are truly His and we are good stewards, then to have a part of Him means that we're going to use that which He gives us to help to grow not only ourselves, but to grow His kingdom, even in minuscule ways.
And so,
and that's the whole point of stewardship too, is that once we do that, then we are required by God to develop that talent and use it for, not hide it, but use it for the good of the kingdom of God. So. Well, we're about to run into choir time, and there's some choir people in here. C-H-O-I-R. Now, there's some choir people in here, a lot of us. Christmas music's upcoming. Anyone else before we go for the evening? Oh, absolutely. We all have times where we get lost. It's not that we lose Him, we get lost. It's a gift. It's a gift that then you develop skillfully. How about that? It's a gift that you develop skillfully. Right. Well,
I think that's everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, we do straight. Yeah, we do straight. But the problem is giving into the temptation to eventually use that as an excuse. I'm saying that, well, we're human and we stray, so, and there are people, you know, and I tell folks all the time, and especially dealing with college students, I say, you know, what we're talking about, I say, you know, the first time you did that particular thing that you didn't feel good about and you knew was wrong, you repented and you really felt bad and you promised God you would never do it again, and then the next weekend when you did it again, you still felt bad and you promised God you wouldn't do it again, and then by the time you did it the fourth or fifth time, it didn't bother you anymore. Yeah, you have to stay, and that's where you lose the discipline. So, you're right. And so I guess then if you come back to the choir and start singing again, that might be because I told about my son. If you don't use it, you're going to lose it. No, I'm just picking at you, Ariel. Okay. Well, God bless you. Thank you. Good night.